Hello everyone, this is Devin. I am your host for our Awaken call today. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. The purpose of this call is to share stories, tell stories, listen to stories, and hold a collective space where we can cultivate the seeds of inner transformation for better quality of life, better community, and a sense of all of us being together. Today for a special guest speaker is Garth Gilchrist. Garth, welcome to our call.
Thank you, Devin.
And thanks again all for joining today's call. And let us start with a minute of silence to anchor ourselves. Welcome again to our weekly Awaken call. And today we are in conversation with Garth Gilchrist, our guest speaker. Our moderator today is Nicole. Let me explain you the format of the call. So we are going to think of our seed question today, which is how stories have impacted our lives. Telling stories, listening to stories, reading stories, seeing stories has such a big impact. And while we are anchoring ourselves to the call, let's think about that. And so, and with that, Nicole, I would pass the baton to you if you would introduce our guest speaker and get us on a journey with Garth.
Absolutely. So, in learning about Garth, the first thing I kind of came up with, Garth, for you was this word steward, that you are a steward of nature. And I thought about that, and I said, you know what, I don't think that's it. I think Garth is more a steward of the story of connection with nature and with people. And that in that you've been able to build a life around that, and you've traveled around the world, observing people, connecting with people, and then telling those stories in so many different ways. And I have a feeling we're going to hear a lot of those stories today, and we're really honored to have you here.
Thanks, Nicole.
Yeah. Go ahead, yeah.
It's wonderful to be here. Thank you, Nicole, and thank you, Devin. I love this Awaken space and the, you know, I haven't met any face-to-face, any of the Awakened people, but I just love being on the calls. I've been on a handful of them over the months, and it's a beautiful thing that individuals share what is important and deep running in their hearts and their souls, and it awakens that which is deep running in other people's hearts and souls, and it's a mutual sparking. I think that's really what the core and heart of storytelling is about, is sparking each other, awakening, to go back to the Awaken theme, very much a sparking of that which is most alive in us. And we live in a time when we're so beleaguered with details, and we have so much information and so much data coming at us and so many things to manage. And you know, people in the old days, they used to sit on the back porches and talk in the evenings, and there wasn't a lot of other distractions, and there wasn't a lot else to do, and people just sat and talked, and people moved much more slowly too, so going from place to place, there was an opportunity to tell stories. But you know, there's a whole other theme that I want to introduce into the conversation, because my real work over the course of the years and decades has been with, as you mentioned, with illuminating nature in a deep way. And I've used story to do that. I have a great reverence for story in all of its different faces, but the area that I've specialized in is the use of story to illuminate nature and to draw people more closely into what I call the great life, or the experience of this great luminous presence that flows through nature in all of its different faces. And it's it brings us to life as we come closer to that universal life of nature. And that's been my great passion. And I'll stop there and you can ask your question. I could go on talking forever.
I have a feeling. And I think we'll get to all of that. And what just popped in with when you said the word spark is I would love for you to share a story that sparked you, maybe from your childhood or, sparked that world of wonder in you that you
right.
obviously have.
I remember when I was in high school, I was off on some kind of a retreat, and there were environmentalists there. It was my first exposure to environmentalists. And there was a professor who was in his 60s, as I recall, and he was sharing about his own boyhood. And he talked about having had, growing up in Montana, and having had a father who was alcoholic and who was very erratic. And he would come home from school some days, all excited about something that had happened in sports or some success that he'd had at school, and be met with a tirade. And you know, his father was just completely off the handle, and it would really hurt him. And I'll never forget this. I was only probably 16 years at the time, and he said, I would go during those times when I felt so confused and so hurt. I would walk down the path through the woods and sit in the tall grass beside the lake. And the grass was like a nest. And I would just let it hold me. And I would look out at the lake and I would listen to the ripples of the water on the shore and to the quiet calls of the birds, of the water birds and the forest birds behind me. And he said, over the course of an hour or so, everything would settle down inside of me, and I would begin to feel calm and feel well again. And I felt that I had a home, a bigger home, even if my, family home was disturbed. I had a bigger home in the wild world, and it welcomed me, and it helped me, and it nurtured me and calmed me and reassured me. And I never forgot that. That was a story that really touched me deeply. And over the years, in the course of my own challenges and travails, as we all have, I have used nature very much like that to be a larger home, which makes the details of my own personal human drama seem not quite so magnified.
Yeah. And how does that translate? How does that translate to today? So maybe sharing, do you mind sharing one of those personal stories or even just how that translates into creating the harmony that you've talked about in your everyday life today?
Right. I see the whole world as a story, and I find as a storyteller that when I perform or even when I'm just talking, it gives people permission to tell their stories, and a lot of stories of delight come out, and meaningful stories from individuals' pasts they'll be eager to share with me. And if there's two or three people there, then suddenly there's a sharing of wonderful experiences about trees or about special spots in their childhood, mm-hmm. or whatever the subject is. Maybe we're talking about boats and time on water, and there's a shared joy there. But deeper than that, I feel that the whole world it's full of stories, not just people's experiences, but I like to walk and look with my eyes and my ears very much open to the stories that are in the landscape. Geology, of course, has stories, and every tree has a story. It's so easy for us to discount things just because they're not human. That's just a tree, that's just a hill, this is just a rock, that's just a plant or just a flower. That word just is so discounting, so dismissing. And instead of discounting things as just something that's not human, as if it's less, to really look at it and to see the extraordinary beauty that's there oftentimes, even in the wayside plants, even in the little flowers. We also discount things because they're small. We want big, grand sunsets and big, amazing animals. And if it's just small and brown, we don't look at it. But if you look at the little brown birds, they're extraordinary. They're amazing little machines. And they've had their own story. They have their own life. every plant, every tree has its own story. And if you walk with curiosity and look and imagine, use the power of imagination to infer or intuit the experience of these different creatures in nature, then everything comes alive in a big way, and the whole world becomes a story.
Yeah, I really hear in that a slowing down to be able to observe those things and hear those stories. And I think right now might be a great time to share one of the poems that you mentioned to me earlier. I have a feeling maybe it connects to what you're talking about.
Yeah, sure. I'm thinking about that first story that I told you, and it brought to mind a poem of Wendell Berry, the great farmer poet. He's a tremendous voice. He's in his 80s now and still going strong. And he wrote many years ago in the 60s, you know, when the atomic bomb threat was such a big thing. He wrote this poem called "The Peace of Wild Things," and it's been one of my favorites for many years. He says, I have it memorized, but I think I'll pull it up just in case. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go down and lie where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water. A wood drake, for those of you who are not birders, a drake is the male bird, and it's the most colorful and the most exquisite of all the ducks. The wood drake is just an extraordinary creature. So he says, when I wake in the night for fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water, and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. So that's Wendell's story.
Wow.
And, you know, Wendell's poem. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. And maybe I'll read one of mine.
Okay.
This is called Can You Hear? If I say wind in pine, if I say wind in pine, will you hear it? Only waves of air washing around inside you through limbs of trees that you planted there long ago or yesterday inside you will deliver my words, wind in pine, alive to you, will carry you into the pure wonder of wildness like a green needle swept into the sky. I'll read that again. If I say wind in pine, will you hear it? Only waves of air washing around inside you through limbs of trees that you planted there long ago or yesterday will deliver my words, wind in pine, alive to you, will carry you into the pure wonder of wildness like a green needle swept into the sky. So the whole idea in that is that I have this concept of inner landscapes, that when something touches us, when a landscape touches us, when we have a story, when we have a life experience, and we go through something in a beautiful place, and it becomes interiorized, it lives within us, and then we can go back and draw on it for decades ahead, simply by concentrating, by meditating, by focusing, and bringing that place back to life within us. So in a sense, the whole world lives within us.
It's beautiful. it's beautiful, and I'm touched by the circular nature of what you're talking about. And I also want to take the opportunity. You started Wendell Berry, and as you're talking, my mind is going to Henry David Thoreau's book on walking. And I also know that you have been heavily influenced by John Muir, and I would love to hear a little bit more about that and weave that into the conversation as well, about that influence that he's had on you and how you use that influence to spread spread your story and to speak these stories to audiences.
Great, Nicole. Yeah, you know, John Muir is known as he's known by practically everybody. Everybody, you know, at least has heard of John Muir. There are more place names of streets and schools and hospitals and parks named after John Muir than after any other American figure, even presidents. So that speaks a little bit to the vast extent of his influence as a conservationist. He was with Teddy Roosevelt, they conceived of the national park system. There were already a couple of national parks, but there was no administration of them. They were just chunks of land. So Muir and Teddy Roosevelt established the whole idea and then the structure of the national park system. Muir also founded the Sierra Club. He was an enormous voice for conservation of wild land, which is really a radical concept in his time, because people in his epoch, his era, considered land to be a raw material that was only useful in as much as it was put to good use. So the idea that wilderness was valuable in and of itself was really a radical new idea. And that bridges to what I really want to say, which is, you know, the conservation movement today is concerned with conserving wild land. And so people really are activists, and they're trying to, and this is a wonderful thing, of course, but we don't get nearly as much of the other side of the story, which is that nature has a tremendous gift to give us, that it's not just us trying to protect land and keep from destroying everything, but to keep from destroying ourselves, or at least, you know, a large quality of our soul and heart is awakened by nature, is awakened by a wildness. And we become deeper, better, bigger people through our connection with wildness. That was Muir's message, really, and that was the brilliance of his writing. And he was a great storyteller. It was one of the reasons why he was so successful as a conservationist, since he was such an extraordinary storyteller. He took experiences that he had personally and then framed them with enough natural history to make himself plausible and respectable enough to scientists, and with enough sense of geology and landscape to, you know, give a real solid feel to his writings. But then he wove in his deep personal experiences, his feelings, the consciousness that he experienced through nature, the power, the magic, the presence, the mystery of nature was woven so much. So it gave people a whole new way of looking at land. It gave people a sense of the sacred in nature. And he also had a very strong Christian upbringing, so he was able to use that language and in a way sacralize nature as the face of God in his way of thinking. So I want to tell, if it's okay, can I tell a short story that Muir told?
Absolutely. That was my next question. I would love to hear one of your own personal stories.
All right, great. So he was a Scotsman, and he came to this country in his teens, but never lost his Scottish accent because he was really just around his family and other Scottish immigrants well into his early 20s. So I do various shows of Muir, from school assemblies to whole evening programs for serious audiences for adults. So this is a snippet about Muir in his first few weeks in Yosemite Valley, where he lived for 8 years and explored the mountains of the Sierra extensively. So he was up wandering along the high cliffs of Yosemite, looking down, and he'd found a place where he could look out and look all the way down to the bottom of the valley on the edge of the cliff, and then he wandered on. So this talks about Yosemite Falls. So he says, after about an hour of this exhilarating cliff exploration, I came upon Yosemite Creek, the stream which feeds the greatest of Yosemite's waterfalls. It was singing and dancing as it made its way down its narrow, rocky channel, chanting the last of its mountain songs, before resting for a while in a still, clear pool, and then accelerating down the last steep slope, before taking the great plunge over the edge of the tremendous precipice, springing free out into the air, and falling 1,000 feet to the pool below. I took off my shoes and stockings and made my way down this steep slope alongside the roaring stream of water. The booming and crashing of the water close past my ears was very exciting. I had imagined that when I got to the foot of this slope, that I should be able to lean out far enough to see the waterfall all the way down. But no, I discovered there was yet a small granite brow over which I could not see, and which was too steep for mortal feet. But there, right at the very edge, was a thin ledge, about 3 inches wide, a perfect place for my heels. But how was I going to get down to it? I surveyed the rock beside me and found a narrow crack which might provide the slightest of finger holds. But oh, the slope was dangerously smooth and steep, and the swift roaring flood of water below, beside, and overhead was nerve-trying indeed. I therefore determined not to go any further, but did anyway. With extraordinary caution, I crept down and got my heels safely planted on that narrow ledge. And now, with my back against the granite wall, and about 1,000 feet of air between my toes and the rocks below, I shuffled to the side about 10 or 15 feet until I was nearly underneath the outpouring torrent of water. And from here, I could get a clear view down into the very heart of the snowy, chanting throng of silvery streamers. Oh, what a view that was! How long I stayed, and how I returned, I can barely say. But I got back to camp that night about dusk, exhilarated, triumphant, determined to have as many adventures in these mountains as they might offer me. Mm. That's John Muir.
Wow.
So with those kinds of narratives, he really excited people.
Yeah, and I heard that. So some of the words that I've heard you use in the things you're sharing are wildness and excitement.
Yeah.
Curiosity, imagination, wonder, adventure, and then in what you just shared, I grew up in Yosemite Valley. I know we were there at least 3 times a summer, and so I was taken back to that place of exactly that place, and yet I don't live there now, and I wonder. How we can bring that wild, that excitement, that curiosity, imagination, and wonder into our everyday lives when we can't get to Yosemite and we can't get to the kind of key nature places, the parks that then you know that are created for us. How can we create that? How can we create that and listen to those? What you were saying earlier about our inner landscape in our everyday lives.
Yeah, thank you. That's a wonderful question. That's a wonderful question. You know, we do live such busy lives, and I think it's a matter of, rather than waiting for weekends or waiting for the once-a-year trip up into a wild place, that we have to bring more wildness into our everyday lives through being more attentive and taking more time. Walks are a really, really rich, I think there's a great wealth in walks that Americans have forgotten to a great extent.
Mm-hmm.
But even just walking to work or walking out in the yard or walking down the street doesn't even have to be an extraordinary place. There are plants everywhere. There are little birds everywhere. And to attend, as I was saying earlier, to look at details. I also I like to talk a lot about presences. That everything has a presence. The clouds in the sky, even rain and mud puddles, stones that you pass along your way. If one gets over this idea of discounting the small and the ordinary just because it's small and ordinary, and learns to open the eyes and look with respect, and look with curiosity, and look with wonder, then even small, ordinary things have great gifts to give us. Yesterday I was walking, and I came upon a bush, and there was a little bush tit, which is a tiny brown bird, and it would have been so easy to simply walk by, but I stopped, and I looked at this little brown bird, and I noticed its very clear, bright eye, and the black pupil in the midst of this clear eye, and I noticed it's very intense energy as well, and its focus on its finding of the little seed cases or whatever it was, aphids that it was looking for on the tree. But it stayed close to me for quite some while, and I was completely delighted by it. And it was utterly miraculous, this little being, so tiny. It would easily, four of them would have fit into the palm of my hand. They're so tiny. And there it was, this little machine full of awareness, full of grace, full of the ability to see, to feel, to move. Its coordination perfect. It would flip from branch to branch. There are little miracles around us that we don't perceive as miracles or as marvels, at least, because we discount. And this is really an enemy, I think, is the tendency to not see the world. We have to slow down and see it and feel it. And things have presences. Just bodies of water have presences that can be deeply calming to us. Trees have wonderful energy and vitality. I love to breathe with trees. Here is the use of the imagination, that we have to use a little bit of imagination to, how is this thing alive and what is it doing? Imagine down on the ground and feel the roots in the ground. They're not visible, but you can feel them if you just imagine. Feel the water coming up the roots, the water rushing up the trunk, the water rushing out the branches, transpiring into the air. The leaf surface, you know, there's a huge area of surface that's there that's interacting with the air around it, and all of that is exciting if you just take the time to imagine. And the movements of trees, the sounds of trees, are really luscious. Again, I could go on. I get a little bit a little bit lyrical here, but I'll leave it at that.
Well, it's beautiful. It's magical, and I think this would be a great time to transition into talking about connection and bring story back to storytelling and how we can tell those stories and not only in our connection with nature connect more with people and kind of trust that those inner roots are working together. And so I would love to hear a little bit more about connection and feeling that feeling of connection to nature, but also to people.
Great,
How that plays out.
That's a great subject to bring up. Story between people, as I was saying earlier, is a great modality for connection, and just stopping to talk and taking the time to tell a story and to hear. And when I'm talking about stories, I'm talking about just, you know, telling stories from our lives. And they can be just anecdotes from our experience in the day. It doesn't have to be anything grand or great, but to take the time to stop and share with people in more than just a soundbite. You know, when people ask you how you are, instead of saying fine, to share a little something from your day. And it touches, and to listen as well. Listening is a great gift. I've found over the years that as I attend, when people talk, they suddenly notice that I'm really listening. I'm looking at them, and I'm really listening. They can feel it, and somehow that creates a trust that allows them to share more deeply. And I find it extraordinary what people will share with me. Not only experiences of nature, but experiences from, about their personal experience and about where their heart is in the moment. And I find myself able to really, you know, I feel help people by listening deeply to them. And I've done a lot of workshops over the years in personal storytelling. And it's always such a joy to just sit and hear people share with each other. And I say, doesn't have to be anything grand. Just tell us an anecdote. Something you remember from your childhood, from your youth, or from last week that happened to you. And people get going, and it's so rich. And I still have a head full of stories that I remember from years and years of storytelling workshops.
Yeah.
If you have children, you know, storytelling is one of the most beautiful things to do with children. And you can start by reading from books, but it's even more magical if you can read the book yourself and then tell the story out loud from your heart, from your eyes, from your mouth, to tell the story. So it's just from you to your children. It's something very beautiful. Mm-hmm. The title of this, the theme of this day today, or this call, is Everyday Harmony. And the subject of nature attunement that I was focusing on some, I feel that there's a great deal of harmony in that. But there's a great deal of harmony to be found in connecting with other people in the course of your everyday life. Not just friends, but people that you meet along the way. Again, to pull back from over-busyness, from agendas, from overstimulation from media, and realize the sacredness of the human heart, the sacredness of the people around you. In the same way that we discount ordinary things, ordinary, small flowers and rocks, we discount ordinary people just because there's lots of them and because they're not special or in our judgment. They're just, they don't look special. They're not dressed special. They're nobody special. They're just, maybe they look sad. Maybe they look boring. Maybe they look like they're not very educated. And we just discount them. I'll speak for myself, I watch how people behave. We tend to discount each other. It's partly a function of living in big places, in big cities, with so many people. And also a function of the media that we're so, that we see important people. And everybody's important. And if we just simply smile as we walk, to live in a quiet place in our heart and smile as we pass people, I find that over and over and over again, that people will be surprised by my smile. And they'll kind of double take, and they'll smile back. And there's a moment of sacredness between us. And if we happen to be sitting together or standing in a line together, then I can say something or humorous or laugh or state something that we're both experiencing in the moment. And they'll, it's an opportunity to experience something very sacred. It's ordinary. It's just two ordinary people standing in line or passing on the road, but something very beautiful happens. And if we do that on a regular basis, every day, not just once in a while, every day, if it becomes a way of being, then people become special, and faces become special. And we, in the same way that I can imagine into the life of a tree, I can imagine into the life of a person, and my natural compassion begins to open. And as my natural compassion opens, the world becomes rich, and I begin to feel other people more deeply. This creates a tremendous sense of harmony because I feel connected now with those people around me, not just moving through them, but I feel connected with them, and I feel some sense of heart connection with them, even if I don't talk to them, even if I just give them a silent blessing as I pass. So that's a little bit about that.
It's beautiful, and and I wonder just how we can, does that come? How do I want to say this? It's almost like what you're talking about is an exercising of a muscle, and you're exercising it in that smile. You're in that connection and creating that sacred space. You're actually exercising those muscles of curiosity and imagination and adventure that we were talking about earlier. In that's the sacredness between those. That's the connection. Words don't have to be shared. You can share that there, and it flexes the muscle, and you can do more of it. And you're reminded to do more of it, right?
it's true. That's a great metaphor. I love that. When you see an athlete running, and you see what great shape they're in. They're in great shape because, and their bodies show it. Their legs are strong and their torso is big and their lung carriage is big because they built that over the course of a lot of exercise. And in the same way, I love what you're saying that as we exercise the muscles of just kindness and the muscles of smiling and of imagining, it radiates from us. In the same way we see the physique of an athlete, I think that those muscles of compassion and muscles of warmth and of openness radiate from us. People can feel that in us, and it will touch them and will open them. We can be we can be a messenger of goodness in the world. The more we do it, the bigger our aura of goodness in the world becomes.
Yeah. So I would love to. Do you have any more poems, or do you have any stories that can kind of reflect back to us some of the things that we're talking about?
Sure. I want to give, of course we'll have a chance for people to share later, and maybe people can share some stories of experiences in nature, or maybe they can share stories of surprise encounters with strangers, or somebody, you know, who touched them in a way by listening to them, or, you know, some stories of stories, in other words, is what kind of what I'm saying, you know? So let me see, I'm looking for a poem here that this is kind of on the theme of what we were talking about.
Yeah.
It's called How Often. This is my poem. How often? How often? I'm asking you. This is not a rhetorical question. How often do you stop in the midst of your daily have-tos, the endless, worrisome minutiae, to consider you are sailing through vast space upon a living, breathing planet? How often, come now, be honest, do you stop to stand before a tree to utter, this is a miracle? Architectural, chemical, hydrological, phenomenological, sculptural. How often, looking into the eyes of a stranger or a lover, a friend or a contestant, do you ask yourself, how did star matter turn itself into eyes? If you are sad, do this. It will help. That poem is really about, you know, slowing down enough to sort of take stock. We get so bloody caught up in the wheels of our mind and the wheels of our happiness that we don't stop to realize the outrageous, you know, beauty and outrageous miracle that surrounds us all the time.
I feel like, you know, yesterday when we were preparing, we both found ourselves on a walk while we were talking.
Just completely by chance. You were walking.
By chance.
I was walking. It was great.
Which was great. And even just in opening my door, I have a plant right outside my door, and I just chose to smile at that plant. And that was a reminder to slow down and really be present to our phone call. And I loved what you just wrote. It was beautiful and magical. It's just that reminder, and I see that as a power of storytelling. Is the stories are reminders, and that's why they're so important to tell.
Yeah, well, we tend to tell stories about what's important to us, don't we? And so in hearing somebody else's story, we're hearing what's important to them, and it helps us to clarify what's important to us too. I suppose choose the stories that we want to tell. And, you know, in the South, there's, in many parts of the world, really, but in the southern part of the United States, there's still a strong tradition of storytelling that's not a formal, there is a formal, practice of storytelling, though. There's lots of storytelling festivals and so on. But what I'm referring to is just in conversation, there's an art of storytelling that's still respected. And even young people, even teenagers, astoundingly, can tell you a good story. They've because it's built into the language and the way of speaking there. There's a great respect for narrative, and the beauty and excitement and delight of narrative. So, why I'm saying that is I believe that it's important for us to cultivate that skill too, to cultivate that muscle, to learn to not just sort of dash off a quick anecdote with the minimal amount of words. But to give it a form, to give it a beautiful body, to present something that's a beautiful presentation, to use language, which is a very powerful tool and a very multifaceted tool, to give beauty and give life to our experiences. So you got me started on this by talking about telling story, what we choose, the stories that we choose to tell. To identify some stories that are meaningful in our lives, and then give them a good form so that you can share those with people in a way that will touch people. Every individual has the power to touch other people through their language, through their voice. But, you know, we have to shape it and move it. And that's, of course, what great motivational speakers do. At least in the great motivational speakers, they're storytellers. They're storytellers, and they use story to move people. All of us can do the same thing. We can be agents for good, agents for good values, for good behavior, for connection with people, for tolerance, for all the values we stand for. We can use story to promote that, and just drawing from our own lives. And it takes a little bit of effort, but it's well worth the effort.
Yeah, and I feel like it takes a lot of courage too. And
how so?
Say it again.
How so? What's coming?
I feel like there's like that first step in sharing stories. I think there are some people that are naturally inclined to sharing a story, and a lot of times people have those stories and they're holding them really close to their heart. And so I wonder if you could maybe share some tidbits in how to be better storytellers or how to take that first step in telling your story for just everyday people.
That's a great question. Thank you.
Yeah.
Good stories are a string of pearls. There's a metaphor for you. Good stories are a string of pearls. The first thing to do in telling a good story or telling your story in an effective way is to respect it. Really respect the story, that there's something there that's really valuable. There's an essence, there's some beauty there that's valuable. And to not discount it. We tend to discount ourselves too. Just
right.
Who am I? Who am I? You know, what's my experience worth? Our experience is worth a lot. So then to give form to the story through the brain loves specifics. The brain doesn't grasp so well on generalizations and on vague. When you learn to write, you know, you learn not to use a lot of adjectives. You learn to use verbs and nouns more strongly. So the images that you give, for instance, if there's a character in my story, if I had an experience, I tell a story about Bobby, who was a childhood friend who had a very generous heart, and he loved to win over enemies. He loved to win over people who were cantankerous or aggressive. He would win them over. He was an extraordinary guy. And so right off the bat, when I introduce Bobby, I say he had bright red hair and blue eyes that had these sparkles in them. And that's true. But what I've done there is give a really clear picture. There's something that people can see. Bobby had red hair and bright blue eyes with sparkles in them. And so now so the next thing, I go on at each point along the way, give very, very clear images. Those are the pearls I was referring to. Your story is a series of clear images. And the meaning then is woven in through that. Of course, you weave the meaning in through, but there has to be a lot of specifics, a lot of clear images for people to grasp onto, and that makes a story delightful. And likewise, it's great to use when you're telling a story to use dialogue, to voice what the other person said as they said it, and even to, you know, actors take one part. A storyteller has to take various parts. You know, you're speaking as this person, then you're speaking as that person, rather than just telling about what they said, to actually say what they said in their voice. That's
right.
And that's very capturing. In elementary school and in high school, you know, there were certain kids that were just really magnetic and really cool. And oftentimes I've noticed as I've watched people that the really great communicators are people that are mimics. Everything's told in the first person in the present tense.
Yeah, I'm drawn because nature is that same way. You know, it mimics each other to survive. It has you know, there's a certain, I see that. I saw that as a bit of a gem. We have a few more moments before we open it up for Q&A. Time for one more poem or one more story. I know you've traveled many places around the world. Maybe you could share a story that sticks with you and you return to often in your life.
You know, I think I'm going to pick up on what Devin, Devin was really taken by something that I shared on a call quite some months ago. And maybe I'll tell that story. And this is kind of in another country and kind of not. For many years, I was a professional environmental educator and a professional professional storyteller, and I traveled all over the place all the time. These last set of years, I've chosen to be closer to home, and I've been running a landscaping company and working with planting natives and helping people understand the value of natives and just immersing myself a little more in the local ground here, which has been great instead of been traveling so much. And in the process of that, I have a team of workers who are Guatemalans, and they have been such a huge teacher to me. None of them have much education. I think one of them went to school 1 year, another one went to school 2 years, another one went to school 6 years. So he's the one that really is the most educated of all of them, the guy that finished elementary school. And yet, even with their lack of education, the formal education, they have a kind of education that I really envy. I don't know whether it came from their family or whether it just came up through the roots of their culture, but they have the extraordinary ability to be wholly present all the time, and that being present all the time manifests as a delight in the moment. They're not worried about what's going to happen next year or making plans for often the future. They're not tormented by the challenges of their past or poverty of their families, or they seem to be wholly delighted in the moment all the time, every day they come to work, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, laughing. They laugh and laugh, and they tease each other, and they praise each other, and they will tell the same jokes over and over again and laugh and laugh, and they're so good-hearted. I can tell them, do this, always, of course, sure, let's do this. And they just dive in with good spirit and wholeheartedness and eagerness. Of course some of them have their difficulties, their moods once in a while, things happen in their lives. But by and large, there's such a deep well-being rooted in just simple presentness. Walt Whitman has this wonderful poem, I would like to go and live with the animals. And he kind of disparages the human world and all of our complications. And he says, I would like to go and live with the animals. I can't recite the poem, but he's talking about the simplicity, just the beingness of the beasts. And these, my workers, these Guatemalan guys, have some of that. They really have a great deal of wisdom of simply knowing how to be in the world with a full heart and to delight in the moment and in life as it is.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
You're a great storyteller. I was taken into that image. Devin, I think we're going to, and actually, Garth, you actually called for some people to share their stories, and I think that was during this Q&A period, and this would be a great time to maybe transition to that, and Devin, if you want to help us do that.
Can I say one more quick thing? Can I say one more quick thing before we run?
Yes.
Okay, great. I want to introduce the word honor, that storytelling and telling a story is honoring the experience and honoring the meaning of the experience and honoring the people in the experience. And when we tell stories about nature, we honor whatever it is that's in the experience, the place or the animals or the people. And so that's what I feel. Yeah. I just want to set that as a context for what's coming up now as all of you may share an anecdote or a story from your life, that what we're doing is honoring.
Yeah.
Wow.
Thank you. How touching.
How touching a thought, Garth. And so well said. We always think that any time that we have callers share their ideas and ask questions, they are really honoring us, and we are honored for this call as well. So, again, for all of our callers, if you have a question or when you have ideas to share, you are welcome to press *6 on your phone, and that will get you in the Q&A queue. If you'd like to email us a question, you're welcome to do so as well. The email address is ask@servicespace.org. So, and again, our theme is Everyday Harmony that Nicole and Garth are developing so well. And if you have stories to share or ideas to share on how stories have impacted you, or if you have a question for Garth, you're welcome to either press *6 on your phone to get in the Q&A queue or email us your question at ask@servicespace.org. And with that, Garth and Nicole, if I may, I would like to get our first caller in the queue.
Hi, this is Mish in New York City, and I just wanted to say how delightful it's been to listen to you speak. And if I'm not mistaken, I thought I heard a Scottish brogue when you were reading John Muir. Am I correct?
Yes, but I wasn't reading. I was just reciting from memory. All of that was just coming out of me.
Okay, well, I just loved your
excitement
about it. And I don't have a story to tell, but I was just thinking while the call was going on about how our growth is so profoundly affected by hearing other people's stories, about how other people's stories, you could see the world through their eyes, and it takes you on adventures you would have never experienced if you didn't hear their stories, perhaps. And I've gotten new perspectives that have enabled me to be very creative in how to navigate my life, and I have grown profoundly by personal stories. I'm talking about people sharing stories about the trials in their life and, you know, how they rose up from being so far down. And there's just so much to learn from other people's stories. And it's like each story is a piece of the puzzle of life, kind of, and that the more stories we hear, more pieces of the puzzle are put together. And it's just, it's just such a blessing to hear people's stories. Thank you.
Thank you. That's beautiful. It's what the Awakened Calls are doing, isn't it? I love the fact that sometimes we have really luminaries, you know, people with tremendous resumes under their belts, and other times young people who are just getting started that have a good idea. And I love the model of the Awakened Call of all of us sharing together, and we're cross-pollinating, really. It's just cross-pollinating.
Yeah.
We get to our next caller in the queue.
Hello, this is Mindy Journey from Illinois, and I would like to say thank you very much for today's speaker, and I enjoyed it very, very much. Since joining Kindspring, I have been encouraged to write poems. They were flowing out of me like water. I write so many that I have to forward into my husband so he can keep track. And I find that it's a reflection of our Kindspring community all over the world, and of also of the peace and serenity I find in my own backyard. And if I could, I would like to just read you one poem I wrote last summer, and it's about my backyard arbor, which gives me much strength and connection to this world. And it goes, if I lived under backyard arbor, I would bathe in the morning dew, and dry myself in dawn's rising light. Spider webs would weave together my dress of the softest green grass. I'd wear necklaces of coneflowers and daisies with bees as barrettes. I'd drink nectar from hummingbird feeders and feast on tomatoes filched from the garden. I'd scamper and scold with the squirrels, taking flight with the gliding birds. If I lived under arbor, every breeze would sing poems, every tree would be my love, and I would melt into the breath of creation, reborn. Thank you very much for this opportunity, and God bless you all.
Thank you. Beautiful.
Thank you so much for sharing that poem. I have a question, if I may, for you.
Sure.
I love the idea that when I tune into things around us, like trees and plants and flowers, and when I tune into ordinary people that I am with on daily basis, it just allows me to see the beauty in them. It opens up my imagination in a way I didn't even knew before. My question is this, and you stressed on over business and how that can stop us from making that connection. And when you said that, you hit me right there, because that's one thing that's bugging me all the time. And I'm a type A. and I hear, it's like every Sunday morning when I slow down, sometimes I just feel that, gosh, I wish I had taken a little more time to reflect during the week. Mm. It restarts and it goes back to the same. So you seem to have developed such an enriching and deep routine of tuning in. What is the secret, and what would be your recommendation for people to slow down and trying to make that connection?
Oh, that's a great question, Devin. You know, I think we often have in our minds, I often have in my mind, that I'm too busy. I have so much to do. Look at this list. Look at what I have to accomplish between now and then. And I don't have time to make connections. I don't have time to tell a story. And we just go racing along, barreling along. And, of course, the next week is just as busy, and the next week is just as busy. And it's all very self-generating. It continues. We end up being a jackrabbit chasing a freight train. And really it's a choice of what's the rhythm that we want to live in. And, yes, we have to be efficient. We have to be competitive. We have to be productive. Those are all givens in this life, and there's no reason we have to slow way down. What I'm suggesting is that it doesn't really take that much time to give a smile. It doesn't take that much time to give a hug. It doesn't take that much time to say a few beautiful words to someone. It's intensity. It's really the quality of intensity and the quality of consciousness that you hold, so that in the midst of your productivity, in the midst of your busyness, in the midst of your efficiency, you give intense, short, beautiful expressions to people in the form of smiles, in the form of beautiful words, in the form of appreciation, in the form of a question, you know, a lot can be accomplished in a short time. In just a few seconds, you can really touch people. And you can see things, as I say, just walking to work. Just open your eyes and look instead of having your face on your cell phone as you walk.
So well said, and it's a nugget I'm going to keep and hopefully use it starting now. In fact, just look at, make the eye contact, take the time to just make that connection, and it doesn't take a whole lot. And that's the key, I think. Just like it's seconds, like you said, if you just have the awareness for it. Thank you for
you're welcome. And what I think you'll find, you know, and what I find is that I'm not just gifting other people. I'm gifting myself in a huge way when I choose to live more in my heart like that. You know, it makes my life so much richer. And coming back to our theme, everyday harmony. How do we live in harmony? You know, share harmony. Be harmonious with people.
I have a question that's kind of connected to that for you personally, Garth. This is Nicole. Was there a significant point where you knew right away that what you're doing now was your calling, or did it just happen over a time period and suddenly you were like, oh, I'm living this life now? Or did you have a moment in time where it was like, okay, I'm listening. I'm finally listening to my heart. How did that happen for you?
Oh, thank you. When I was a boy, we lived in the suburbs of Seattle. But suburbs in those days were very different than suburbs are today. We had acre lots, and there was a lot of woods, and there were empty lots. There was a stream up at the end of the lane. And I spent a lot of time just being in nature, you know, wading in the stream or lying in the woods, watching sunlight filter through the trees. And so very early on, even as early as 7, 8 years old, I remember being completely enchanted by the natural world. And then in Boy Scouts, in my teens, we went up into the high mountains, and I had some powerful experiences up there of just seeing the vastness, the grandness, the hugeness of the world, and the purity, feeling the purity of it. So that began to speak to me really deeply. It was on into my 20s, I think, that I began to discover storytelling and the power of story, and working with kids in summer camps and then later as a school teacher, and developing story. And then it was later that I began to pull those two together, realizing how powerful story was to illuminate nature. So I don't know if there was any point. I think it did come very early for me, my attunement with nature and my feeling that that's where I wanted to go. And then various things opened over the years. I met Joseph Cornell when I was in my early 20s, and he's very well known all around the world as a great environmental educator. And helped him in the production of his book, Sharing Nature with Children, and that was a great opening for me, you know, that allowed me to step in a career way into nature education in a deep way. And I'll say one more thing, that my mother grew up in Illinois, and she was a great storyteller. She never knew it. She never would have called herself that, but she was full of wonderful stories about the old days and about all the relatives and about wild things that had happened in her childhood and in her youth. She ended up, when she was 65, sitting down and writing a book, 800-page manuscript about her life, which was filled with the most wonderful stories. So I suppose I absorbed through osmosis some of that storytelling quality from my mom.
Wow. Now, one thing, Nicole and Garth, when I think of tuning in to people around me, is so many times my guard is up as if I'm trying to protect myself from something or someone. Mm-hmm. And there are moments when I'm completely in the flow and I can mingle and talk and I can connect. And there are times when I am somehow feeling the need to keep my guard up.
Mm-hmm.
And I can actually feel it, I can experience, and I could tell sometimes right after that because of me doing that, I didn't make the connection. The guy would think that he was so detached or his face didn't show any expression or any emotions, and God knows what he was thinking about, right?
Mm.
And so what is your experience, Gareth? Like, why would my guard be up? It's because of my insecurities, probably, or maybe just that I'm so caught up in what I need to get done.
Mm. Yeah, I think there's various reasons. First off, I want to say that, Devin, you and all of us have the right to be in our own space, to be in our own quietude. We all have the right to do that, and we need to do that sometimes. Life is busy. Life is demanding and taxing and tiring, and we have the right to be quiet and to be in our own space, and that's just fine. But even if we give ourselves that permission to be peaceful, even when we're not interacting with people, our being still is speaking a quietude, speaking a recollection, you know, which may be a blessing to people. But then, you know, to go back to more directly what your question was, I think fear is a big quality. We're afraid of making the wrong impression on people, of having people think that we want something from them, or, you know, especially in this country, men are so uptight and so they won't reach out to women because they're afraid that the women are going to think that they're hitting on them. They won't reach out to men because the men's going to be afraid that they're hitting on them. The men, maybe they're gay or something. And so people stay so tight from fear, you know? And there again, it's great to travel to other countries. In Mexico, that doesn't exist. People just talk to each other and share with each other. Everybody's part of the club. To be part of the club, you have to be a human being and speak Spanish. That's about it. Those are the only requirements. Everybody's part of the club, and so everybody talks to each other. There's not that fear. It's so refreshing. You find that in Europe, too. There's a different quality in some countries in Europe. There's a different quality of openness and relaxation. But you were saying that the tenseness that you feel, it's not necessarily what could you say it again? What you felt your motivation was for the tenseness? I lost that bit. Sorry.
It's insecurity that is making my guard up, maybe.
Your guard up, right.
What I wanted to bring up to you is, what is your experience? And you seem to be doing it so easy and making it look so effortless. What's your secret? And what can we do? What can we learn from you? I was trying to get to that.
Okay. I think, you know, there's a quality of we're very troubled by individuality, hyper individuality, exaggerated individuality in our culture, that I'm me and you're you, and I stop here and you start there. And so we're so much I and you, or me and others, we feel separated, as opposed to having the consciousness of we. And this is why I love nature consciousness so much, is that everything flows. Everything is part of a great whole. Nothing stands alone. Everything is connected and interacting. And if we can bring that into the human world, too, to realize that we're all in this together. There's a we. And the man that's your age, that's beside you, is experiencing many of the things that you are. The child that you see, you know, has a whole, he's the child that you were. The old woman that you see is the old woman that you're going to be. You know, that there's a sense of we-ness and a sense of the human experience, and we're all having this human experience. So the heart opens, and there's a warmth that naturally flows out, or a compassion, or a sympathy that naturally flows out. And that, again, as Nicole was saying, is a muscle that has to be exercised.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right. I love it. I love it.
I feel called to share a story because I used to be steeped in fear and not talk. And for people that know me now know that it's hard to not get me to stop. I will continue to talk. I was steeped in fear. And really over my journey, I really have realized that it's in sharing that I can let go of that fear. And I have to play games with myself for that. I know that when I started my organization, before I even did it, I for 1 week challenged myself to share my idea at least once a day with a complete stranger. And that was with the lady who owns the coffee shop down the street, the person at the grocery store who was checking me out. And in that, it was so scary. I would feel, because I knew I had to do it. There was no option of letting myself off the hook.
Wow.
And I would get all sweaty and, oh my gosh, I'm going to do it right now. And I would get very anxious. And I didn't know where that was coming from. And once I did it, I would get these smiles back because I realized that I was sharing authentically. And it just eased me into it. And I started to build that muscle. And now I feel like I'm like this, sometimes this, the, like, bodybuilder with their big, huge muscles holding out.
Thank you for telling us that story.
Yeah.
That's a great story. Thank you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And now we have one more caller on the queue.
Great.
And for all of our callers, if you have a question or a story or a thought to share, you're welcome to press *6 and that will get you in the queue. Or you're welcome to email your question at ask@servicespace.org. And with that, let's go to our next caller. Hi.
Hi, this is Audrey. Calling in from Berkeley, California.
Hi, Audrey. You're just across the bay. If you wave, I'll probably see you.
Okay, I'm waving now.
Okay.
Too bad I'm not on top of a hill. this has been such a great call to listen to, and I'm so grateful for David and Nicole for hosting it and for you for spending your time sharing your stories. The thoughts that you shared, particularly on fear and on recognizing the we and the interconnectedness made me think of a memory. And then I also kind of had a question of reflection for you. I was actually reminded of a time many years ago when I was out on a hike, out walking in nature, and I ended up getting lost. and it was, in a really rural area. And I was with some friends, and we were walking, and we were lost, and we had no idea where we were going, but we just kept walking. And then one of them just said, you know, you're never really lost out here. And as we were walking, there was this herd of elk that just swept into view, and we ended up walking with this herd of elk,
wow.
You know, into the horizon almost. And we had no idea where we were going, but it didn't feel like we were lost. It just felt like we had come home. And you just, you know, your story about really honoring our interconnectedness and seeing the we really reminded me of that. And then kind of in that spirit, I was wondering when you mentioned about, you know, stepping past that fear, or as Nicole mentioned, like, or and David mentioned, like the maybe guards that we might have up. I was wondering if you might be able to share, think of a time when you might have had to face, you know, a challenge or a blockage or a guard that was up and while you were walking or while you were connecting with people and how that and how you kind of rolled with that.
Oh, yeah. Let's see if I can think of a specific time. I mean, that's happened to me hundreds of times, thousands of times perhaps, you know, to have to overcome that sense of blockage. I suppose I was in China a couple of years ago, and I found normally I'm used to being able to communicate wherever I go, either with English or with Spanish. Spanish is used so much, and even knowing Spanish, you can communicate pretty well if you're in Italy or you know, even with Portuguese-speaking people. But in China, there was just like no relationship, period, between Chinese and English. And so there was just no overlap at all, and I found myself alone on numerous occasions and not being able to. So I was in a taxi cab, and I needed to get to the airport, and I was late, and the plane was going to take off, and the bus had been late. And I got onto the street and was, you know, knowing that I had to find a taxi cab. So the taxi cab pulled up, and I got in, and she looked at me, and I looked at her, and I said, I need to go to the airport. And she looked back at me, and she was completely blank. You know, she didn't know what I was talking about. And what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And she looked a little bit irritated, actually. I said, okay, mm-hmm. Let's see here. What's our common language? You know, what's our common language? And I stretched my arms out and I started, you know, making the sound of an engine. And then she looked alarmed. Then she looked alarmed. She thought that she had a crazy person in the place with her. And I said, oh no, it's okay. And I said, I have to go to the airport. And I kept thinking, what shall I do? And then I got paper and pencil out, and I drew a picture of an airplane, and then she lit up, and then she smiled and said, "Oh, airport." She didn't say it. Whatever airport is in Chinese, she said, and she took me to the airport. But the reason I tell that story is because as we then drove to the airport, there were smiles between us. There was some we had communicated. We had succeeded in overcoming this communication barrier. And there was a sense of mutual accomplishment there, and there were smiles, and she, you know, nodded her head and bowed, and I nodded my head and bowed and smiled, and we both felt this sense of accomplishment when we got to the airport. So that's the story that came to my mind most quickly.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Wow. We have a thought that came over the email. And let me read that out loud for all of us. This is Terry from Ithaca, New York, the home of God's alma mater, Cornell University. I don't have a story or question, but an observation. One of the wonderful byproducts of reading or hearing stories is the enhancement of our ability to empathize, whether with fellow human beings or with other creatures. Every time we hear a story, we are reminded that other people or even other living beings have inner lives. That seems almost too obvious to mention. But in these materialistic times, when the inner life is so called into question or even discounted by some scientists or philosophers, stories are an important support and advocate for humanism. Thank you for
Beautiful.
This talk, which again supports the existence and the value of inner life. So well
Beautiful.
Said, and that is from Terry from Ithaca.
Beautiful,
thank you so
beautiful.
Much, yes, how beautiful. It's beautiful. Very touching.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing it.
I want to make just a short comment on that traditional stories, we've been talking a lot about personal stories, but traditional stories embody a great deal of nobility. They embody the best in the human spirit oftentimes. And there are many, many, many stories available and dozens of collections, hundreds of collections of stories from many, many different cultures. And if you read stories or listen to stories or go to storytelling festivals, Every state has a storytelling festival, and it's very worthwhile going. And you'll hear really quality storytellers telling very fine, beautiful stories that do exactly what the caller was suggesting of expressing deep nobility and deep quality of soul and deep quality of heart, and giving models of the best of what it means to be a human being, and cultivating empathy and cultivating broadness of heart in people. And it's true. It's a very powerful role of story.
How thank you, Garth, and so well said. We said let's go to our next caller. Hi.
Hi. This is Kozo from Cupertino. Thank you, Garth, for dropping so many sparks inside of me today.
All right.
I love that analogy. And I wanted to ask you if you could tell a story. As being a professional storyteller, I know you just spread all these sparks everywhere, and I was wondering if you've ever got like feedback back on how that spark ignited something in somebody and maybe changed their life, changed their direction, changed what they thought about the world. And, you know, if you got to see that circle come back from you setting the spark to being sparked by somebody else.
That's a great question. That's a great question. I think that I've had that kind of response more often, you know, many, many, many times when I tell personal stories, and particularly when I tell personal stories about experiences in nature. I have a story about my childhood. I built a treehouse between two trees and would spend a lot of time up there. And there were, during my teens, and there were sad times, there were happy times, but during the sad times, I would listen to the tree just whispering, and it would comfort me. And across the way was a huge tree, which my dad, when I was young, kind of almost jokingly said, maybe you'll climb that tree one day. But I took him seriously, but I couldn't figure out how to climb it. And it took me until I was 18 years old and came back from college, and I did a little bit of rock climbing, learned about ropes, and I finally got up into that tree. And by that time, my father had died, passed away. And so I got to the top of the tree and looked out over these vast, you know, vistas over the mountains to the west and the mountains to the east and the Puget Sound and the lakes, and saw the world in a much bigger way than I ever had before. And from the top of this tree, and I could feel my father's spirit and feel him congratulating me and feel our closeness. And so I told that story. I tell that story as an example here of many stories that I have about my own personal experiences in nature. And when I tell that story or when I tell other stories, I'll have audience members come up afterwards and say, my goodness, I could see all of that. And it brought back a story that I remembered. It brought back an experience I had with a tree when I was a boy or when I was a girl. Or I remember a forest that I used to spend a lot of time in. Stories started coming up in my mind. Memories came up in my mind from my childhood or from my youth that I'd completely forgotten about. Until you told your story. And I love that. I love that my story can awaken people's stories, can awaken their own memories and their own connection with nature. And then, of course, many times when I've told traditional stories, people will be moved. And I can't think of a particular instance, but people, you know, over and over again come up and tell how moved they were. And I think, you know, I'm seeing it at the beginning of the story. You know, I just told the story and they're moved by it. And who knows, you know, how that will affect them as they go along. I don't remember anybody coming back later and saying, you know, having heard this story, this is what happened to me.
I can give you some immediate feedback right now. Mm-hmm. Is that you telling that story about climbing that tree, you know, almost reconfirms, like, my father died when I was 3. I had a Hawaiian grandfather who died when I was about 20. But I still feel them, you know. There's still a presence in my life. I'll feel my Hawaiian grandfather when I see the ocean. But, like, so you telling that story kind of reconfirms for me that that's real. You know, that presence is real because you felt that same presence with your father in 3. And so, yeah, thank you for that.
Ah, beautiful. Thank you so much. Language is powerful. Language is really powerful. And as we speak beautiful language and meaningful language, it really has a huge effect on other people's consciousness.
And I think what you just touched on was that muscle, right? That we, in sharing our story and people listening, we're building that muscle because we're getting confirmation that our own stories have that inner meaning. And we've hit our time mark. And I think I just want to say thank you, Garth. And we flowed through quite a bit. And it's been magical. I think that there's like three, maybe four calls could have been pulled out of everything that we've shared today. And I think I'm going to turn that over to Devin to do the final closure.
Thank you, Nicole.
I do want to honor you and thank you for all that you've shared with us today. It's been beautiful and magical.
It's my joy and my pleasure. Thank you so much for being a great moderator. And thank you, Devin, too. Thank you to all the callers and everybody who shared.
Sure. So, guys, one takeaway that stay with me, and it's what you mentioned, that when we can be agents for all good values we stand for when we take time to develop and tell our stories.
Mm-hmm.
And with service space, we quote Mahatma Gandhi all the time, and that is, be the change you want to see in the world. And Garth, today you inspired me to tune in to people around me, all the things around me, and bring that connection to connect and tell stories. And thank you so much for doing that. Now, Garth, if I may ask you like one final question.
Sure.
We all, on behalf of like Service Space, the community of people and leaders and volunteers, what can we do for you?
That's a beautiful question. I will take the opportunity to say, take advantage of the moment, the wonderful opportunity, and say, find a story from your life, an experience that you had that was meaningful to you about a person or about an experience in nature, and give it beautiful clothing. Spend a little time with it, give it beautiful clothing, and go and share it with a child or with a friend and see what happens.
Awesome. How touching. How touching. Mm-hmm. I'll take it as my call to action.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Garth. And let's ground ourselves in a minute of gratitude for the wonderful call we had. So for all of our callers, and for all of us, a minute of silence, please. Thank you all for sharing the collective space, the beautiful call. On count of three, I would like all of us to say thank you, Garth.
Hold on one second, Devin. I wanted to say that if you want to see more of the poetry, the essays, you can go to wordsoftheland.org, wordsoftheland.org. And if you want recordings of the Muir stories, there are CDs available, and that's at jayatu.org, J-A-Y-A-T-U, jayatu.org. Thanks.
Perfect. And I will include those links in my follow-up note later today as well. So on count of three, I'd like all of us to say thank you, Garth. Okay, count of three. 3, 2, 1.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Blessing.
Thank you.
Love.
Namaste. Thanks to all of you.
Namaste.
Beautiful.